Welcome to episode 356 of Coffee Pods and Wads. You can go to lskd.co and you can pick rest of world or America or wherever you're based. If you use CPW LSKD, you'll get a discount. I bought one of their bags there during the week. It's top notch, top quality stuff. Frog grips, best grips on the market, bar none. They make like sweatbands for your wrists as well, knee sleeves, tape. Heap of stuff, froggrips.com. If you want to test out your frog grips with some great training, you can check out Sentinel, Taylor Self's training program. It's unbelievable. You can go to btwb.com and join Beyond the Whiteboard. So if you're an affiliate, you can use it for your affiliate programming, for your members, all their payment details and stuff. And if you're on your own or doing, if you're a coach, you can use it for delivering your program to your clients. And if you're a client, you can use it to track your workouts. And if tracking things is your thing, you can go to join.whoop.com/CPW, get a discount there on a Whoop strap membership discount as well. And then I get a little kickback, so it's nice. Go odd. If you want to, I don't know, get frustrated at your hamstrings and improve them, you can download Go Odd and give it a go. D8fitness.com. If you're based in Ireland, you can use that. Company for all of your fitness facility needs, whether it's upgrading your equipment with new equipment or upgrading it with some servicing and stuff, d8fitness.com. And Built for Athletes make bags. They've got little kind of travel bags, they've got backpacks, they've got luggage bags, just all sorts of just different bags for all your baggage, emotional or physical. You can go to builtforathletes.com and you can use CPW15. Today's guest is Kyle Rolfe, Emily Rolfe's husband and coach. Crazy interesting guy. Got chatting to him in Miami. Just ridiculous amount of different things he's done. Enjoy.
There's less, it comes across as less enthusiastic than Savan's bam, we're live, but yeah. It does the job. How are you?
I'm doing well, mate. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm good.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt your drink there. My apologies.
No, you're okay. I was saying this to you when we were in Miami. My son has a habit of, like, if he's up, if I'm holding him here, he gets one or multiple, not at the same time, but like alternates, and just like rams his finger into my like ear canal. But, like, his fingers are so small that they go down like quite a distance, you know, like they're like narrower than mine, obviously. That'd be weird.
No cotton bud needed. You just got a son that cleans your ears out for you.
Oh, but he just, like, I constantly feel like there's something in my ear then, just because he's always like, I don't know, it just feels weird. I spoke to you about this when we were in Miami, but I was very confused the first time I heard you. If you can silence those there, that'd be great. The first time I heard you speak and not shout, and I was like, oh fuck, he's English.
Yeah,
because it's very hard to discern an accent from someone just shouting the word Emily or whatever. It's very hard to place an accent. Whereabouts in the UK are you from?
I'm originally from a place called Lincolnshire in England, East Midlands of England, basically.
Okay. From Lincoln Town, like?
Well, I was brought up in a village just on the outskirts of the city itself.
Okay. Lincolnshire. Oh, is Lincoln a city?
Yeah, it is, yeah. It had the tallest building in the world for ages, for a long time. So the cathedral there is pretty old school.
Really?
And then
that is?
Yeah, that's it right there, yeah. And then one of
the birds came along.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then one of only two Motton Bailey castles in the whole of the country as well. So I believe William the Conqueror wanted to make it his London. So no big deal.
Right. Motton Bailey, is that the one with the...
Oh, a moat. Mott is moat, right? So Motton Bailey. Yeah. It would have originally had a moat around. It doesn't anymore, but... And then
those like fake underwater bridges that only they knew where they were or something as well, I think.
Yeah, you may be right. It's very, very old though. So, and the crown court is still inside there. So it's well used still now today.
That's cool. Okay. Right. Yeah.
not at all where I thought we were talking about. That's fine. My knowledge of like, so like when I look up at a map, obviously this is kind of cheating because I can see where everything is. I put London there, like where the mouse is now. Yeah. And I put like Newcastle, like up here somewhere.
In Scotland. Got it.
Yeah. I just have no concept of like, where does Scotland start and end? Where does Wales start? I always think Wales is down here, like this bit instead of the middle bit.
You think Wales is in Cornwall? Awesome. This is a good start.
I always think of like, because like say here for Ireland, it's like Northern Ireland is up here in the north and it's like the uppermost coast or whatever. So I always think like Scotland is the uppermost coast and Wales is the lowermost coast. And then that's just how I always pictured it from the age of like 7. And I cannot get that out of my head. I'll just zoom out just so Americans know where we're talking about. over here,
Tiny
over yonder.
Is that Tiny Little Island? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Great comment. Here we go. Another coach that's banging their athletes.
I knew that Wad Zombie was going to troll me. I was pre-warned. I love the fact he paid for that comment.
Yeah, he knows it's guaranteed to get brought up. Yeah. Okay, so you're from Lincoln, but you live in Vancouver, right?
Yes, Vancouver, Canada, yeah.
Okay. How long have you lived there for?
Since November 2011, so 13, going on 13 years.
Wow, okay. And what brought you to Vancouver?
Initially, I was in the interior first. I was in a place called Sun Peaks, and it was a skiing and snowboarding. So I was having a jolly old time, some would say.
What age are you now?
What age am I now? 37. Yeah.
So you were like 25, 26, somewhere around there.
A wee band.
And were you an aficionado in skiing? Like, was that, there's probably not much skiing in Lincolnshire, is there?
There's no skiing whatsoever. Steep hill would be about it. I've sledged down that once before, but that would be about it, yeah.
So when did you come to be skiing over there then?
I was very privileged as a child, and that was what we did as a family, so we always skied. And I actually ended up in 2010, I went and did a season in Switzerland and got certified as a ski and snowboard instructor, and then I decided I wanted to go and do a season in Canada because I'd spend a couple of holidays in Canada, done Whistler 3 times, Fernie once, and then got offered a job at Sun Peaks and decided to go and do that.
What did your parents do that you were off skiing?
What did they do? Yeah, my father was in law enforcement, like I am now. Okay. And my mum was, she was in law enforcement before I was born, but then she went and became a nurse and then worked her way up into managerial roles for the National Health Service in England.
Okay. So a not insignificant paycheck coming home from...
They did very well. I mean, we're very lucky. At the time when I was a kid, the pound was very strong as well. Yeah. So going to Canada, I think when I first went, I think it was like $3 to the pound. So, yeah, I mean, not that it was cheap, but it was definitely cheaper than it is now.
Yeah, I've never been skiing. I did, you know that, it's like a massive treadmill and like, but it goes backwards and you go down. Like it's okay. Like an indoor practice, I guess. Mm-hmm. I did that once. I just thought it was shit. Like, obviously it's not the experience you're going for when you go skiing to just be like,
boom. Yeah. You don't really get the wind blowing through your hair, so to speak, when you've got a treadmill.
Yeah, you're just like, oh, there's that spot of the treadmill going in. There it is, exactly. Like flying past. Okay, so you grew up there, went skiing and stuff. And what about, you mentioned something about coach rugby and stuff too.
Oh, yeah. So I've been coaching for approximately 24 years of my life now. I started in martial arts when I was 14, coached martial arts, and then went on to rugby.
Well, no, hang on, I'm going to stop you there. How do you coach martial arts when you're 14? Well, do you coach?
You'd help out with the kids' class, right? So,
okay.
Yeah.
I just think it'd be a bit demoralizing if you're like 25, like a 14-year-old comes in and says, all right.
Yeah, no, I mean, age is only a number, but I think at 14 you don't know your ass from your elbow. So, but to be able to coach kids and help out with the kids class, that's kind of where I started.
What kind of martial art was it?
It was traditional Japanese martial art of jiu-jitsu.
Okay, so is that different from BJJ then?
Yeah, so Brazilian jiu-jitsu originated from Japanese jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu was the unarmed combat of the samurai.
Okay.
But we also did Bokken, Shikirin, Tanto.
Okay. All that. And then Donatello and Raphael are the last two turtles, isn't
it? Yeah. For the martial artists that are watching it, we did the weapons as well, is basically what I was saying. So.
Fuck, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. And who was that your drive to get involved in that, or like did your dad kind of encourage you to do it, or how did you get involved in that?
No, I took up martial arts. I mean, I always had a keen interest. You know, you watch as you're younger, you watch the Jackie Chan, Bruce Lee movies kind of thing. And I truly believe that martial art is a very good discipline for anything. Like it teaches you good discipline. In short, it's a great way of getting out. It's a good session for cardio as well. Like, it's a great workout. But the other side of things as well, it's great for self-defense and whatnot. Not that I really had too much trouble at school kind of thing, but you always, I got into my fair share of fights, I'm sure, but never really a problem. So,
What kind of school did you go to? Was it like a boarding school or a day school?
No, I went to a comprehensive school. So comprehensive school just in the village next to me.
Okay. And that's just like a public, like come and go day.
Yeah, you don't have to write an exam. You know, it's not like a grammar school or anything like that. You don't have to write an exam to get to it. But one does have to know how to tie a tie and put a blazer on in the morning, that sort of thing. So,
yeah, one does. All right. So you start coaching that, and was that did your instructors or whatever when you were doing that? Did they say, Kyle's got a bit of something about him, let's get him involved in this? Did you ask to do it? Like, how does that start?
I think it was so long ago now. I think I just kind of offered to help. And I would do, there was always be an adult class afterwards. So it was two birds, one stone. I remember I used to travel with my sensei, and he'd pick me up and we'd go out, and it'd be about a 30-minute drive away or whatever. So I'd go and help out with the kids' class, and then go and actually take class myself. And it was kind of two birds, one stone sort of thing. So,
did you get paid for that?
No, I didn't get paid for it. No, it wasn't a paid job. Kind of like the job I'm in now.
For the love of it, again.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And then what else after that then? So you coached, I assume you just didn't coach that all the way up until you went skiing. You coached other stuff too?
So I started in martial arts, and then I played rugby since I was knee high to a grasshopper. I started at age four or whatever, and I played. The common thing is in England, and obviously in Ireland and Wales and Scotland, like football and rugby are like the grassroots of every school kind of thing. So I played rugby, and I went on to play quite a high standard of rugby in England for Lincoln. I played for, and then I was like, I quite like the coaching side of things from martial arts. Maybe I'll do my coaching qualifications for rugby. And I did my coaching qualification. And I basically started coaching rugby for, again, I think it, well, they were called them, the Colts, they were called, but they were under 18s basically prior to men's rugby. And I coached them up, and we went and came, I think they were fourth in the country in 2007 or something like that. So it was quite a high standard.
Yeah.
And, I've always found when you start coaching something, you get better at something yourself. I've definitely found that with sports. I have not found that with CrossFit, because I'm absolutely terrible at CrossFit, but I do not try in any shape or form to say I am good at that. But yeah,
it's interesting. Like you obviously have this drive or this, like, I don't know. You obviously want to be involved. Like, first of all, like, you
I think stupidity is the word you're looking for. Stupidity of being involved. Yeah, for sure. That's
you know, like, there's that thing of like, if you can't do, teach, and like, you could obviously do rugby quite well.
Yeah.
But you still wanted to be around it. And then you kind of, it's almost like you kind of live vicariously through whoever you're helping. Like if they do well, you do well. If they feel good, you feel good.
That is definitely the story of my life. Yes, I do live vicariously through a lot of people, especially Emily right now, I'm sure. But I do enjoy teaching. I don't always believe that the best players or competitors or anything like that are the best coaches.
Yeah.
And I've never been the best player. I've never been the best at anything, and I don't claim to be the best at anything. I'd like to think I'm adequate at a lot of stuff, a jack of all, master of none, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I've just been very privileged. But I suppose the art of giving back and kind of the rugby community. I was very, like I said, growing up, I was very young when I started, and you want to kind of show that when you're growing up as well, like how much fun it is to younger generations and stuff. And to be able to have an opportunity to do that is a privilege, really.
Yeah. It's funny though, because I was actually thinking about this the other day, about that. There is this kind of thing, and we're going to get derailed now a little bit, but you're a good man to talk to it about it too, I think. There is that thing of like, you know, that like curse of knowledge, you know, like when you know something, like say you're incredibly proficient at doing muscle ups, and it's like 10 years since you had to think about how to do it. That it's just like hop on the bar, do it. It's just second nature. There's no, or like snatching, you don't even need to think, you don't think of cues, you just do it. Yeah. And then someone comes in and then they ask, like, how, like, what do I do? And then you have that gap of like, you just do it.
It's no longer cognitive to them, right? It's autonomous.
Jump up on the bar and do your muscle. What do you mean? What do you do?
Yeah, exactly.
And I've had that where I've had people who are incredibly proficient and incredibly skilled at stuff. It's usually gymnastics, because that's probably what I'm worst at. Definitely what I'm worst at, as well as like cardio, weightlifting, everything else. But you have that where you say like, oh, I'm kind of stuck at this bit. And then they give you a tip, and to them it's like, they're going to nail it now. Whereas they walk away and you're like, what? Like, what the fuck did you just say to me? And how is that supposed to make any sense to me? Whereas it brings up that thing of like, do you have to be able to do it or to have done it to coach it? Or are you sometimes better off having never done it or been able to do it, but to have all, like, is it a balance of the two? Do you need to be somewhere in the middle of being incredibly proficient at something, but really well read on it? Or are you better off being really well read in it than you are only being really proficient at it? You know what I mean?
Well, not to get too geeky about this, but it's actually to do with the learner. So obviously you've got kinesthetic learners, you've got visual learners, you've got audio learners. So it all depends on that. I've been very privileged. I've done a lot of courses, and actually I did a course a few years ago on effective facilitating and how to present to people. So we learned about all that side of stuff, and that only helps you even more, because you can be to someone, I suppose a really good way of explaining it is, if you're speaking to someone in French, but they only speak Scandinavian language or whatever, like it's not going to work. Same as if you're speaking in English. And if I think that's the same with learners as well, is you can do a great demonstration, or you can say, oh yeah, all you got to do, for example, for a muscle, but yeah, all you got to do is do a pull-up, rotate your hands over, and then push up, and then extend your arms, and that's it. Some people will understand that, whereas in other people will be like, well, I have no idea what you're saying, and I'm going to do a pull up, and then I'm going to push up with my arms. So am I pushing up this way, or am I pushing up this way? It's all interpretation. Yeah. So when I was teaching and going on from rugby, I went on to ski teaching. That was a huge thing for me. It's like, you have to do a good visual, you have to do a good verbal, and then you have to like kind of let them fail on their own a little bit as well. You've got to have people try things. And when you say about people being able to do it, they just go, oh, I can just do it. If they cannot speak the language or cater to the learner, then they're never going to actually learn. Now, I can't visually show someone how to do a muscle up. Well, in my case, what I would do is I'd have someone else show a muscle up, say, okay, that was good there, this and that. Or you can pull up a YouTube video. There's always some way to cater, especially with technology that we have today. video analysis and stuff is huge for feedback for athletes across every sport and every discipline, I find.
Did you see the video Hitter made yesterday on HWPO?
I did not. No, I'm sure it was entertaining.
What's the guy's name? Will something. He's a YouTuber. Was in HWPO with Matt. And yeah. Hitter just kind of picked apart. Obviously, the video is edited. Like, he's watching the finished product from this guy, Will, he's a famous YouTuber. I should probably know his surname. Sorry. But Will Tennyson. So you're watching, thank you, Corey. You're watching the end product from Will Tennyson. So it's kind of like, right, how much has been edited? Like, what's been shown, whatever. Fine. But Hiller picks apart that Fraser is bringing Will through a day of his training, but like kind of not explaining anything. Like he's sort of in that zone of like, you just do it, you know, like, or you just do that. Here's what I usually do. Or you just do this. Or for me, I do this. And it's kind of jarring because you're watching like someone be coached, but not coached. And I think a lot of us have been through that scenario where at some point you're somewhere being coached by someone and you're kind of thinking to yourself like, right, but I don't really understand like what you're telling me to do or showing me to do, or the cues that you're giving me just don't ring true for me. And then just like more weight just kept being put on the bar, and it was just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, but again, you don't know the context. It could be like, hey, we're going to make this video, and for the purposes of the narrative of the video, even if I can't do it, we'll just keep going or whatever. You don't know what was said, but it was like, it did shine a very poor light on, you know, the coaching tactics that were being used, if they're the coaching tactics that are being used. But again, it brought up that thing of like the proficiency versus the, I don't know, learnedness or whatever, or the awareness of the learner. Like, I learn all that shit. I'm a teacher. I learn all that shit about kinesthetic, visual, aural, whatever. But I guess I'm probably similar to a coach and an affiliate where I have 20 people, 20 kids. So it's like, if there's one kinesthetic learner and 19 aural learners, I mean, sorry, mate, like, we're not going to get to you every single time we're doing something. It's going to be like row in with the rest of us, or, you know, we'll try and do some kind of thing. And I think it's probably the same challenge for coaches too.
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't see the video, so I can't comment on that, but it sounds to me that he was catering to a certain type of learner. And that's why some people will come in and say, oh, I've tried following a YouTube thing. Well, all you've got is majority of that is visual. Like, you don't have, some of it blends over if they've done a good visual cue, or if they then put it in writing and stuff. But again, like you say, if you're not catering to the learner, they're never going to learn. It's never going to be a successful outcome.
But even like I had recently, I train a lot on my own. And recently I was in Miami and I did Taylor Self, whose program I follow, was doing like a class, and I did it. And even that, you talk about the kinesthetic thing, like, you know, he was like, oh, get your hips low. We were doing like power snatches or something, I think. Power cleans. And he was like, get your hips lower. And I was like, okay. And in my head, I was like, can't get much lower than that. And then like, he just came and moved me and was like, no, like here. And I was like, right, that's entirely different than what I was feeling like 3 seconds ago. And, you know, like, he could tell me that 20 times in 20 different ways, and I'm still going to be in my head being like, they fucking are low.
Yeah.
But I can't move myself from the outside. And then once I moved in, I'm like, all right. And the words he said after he moved me were like, I want you to feel that struggle to be there like every time now. And then, so the whole way through the workout until I got fatigued after 3 reps, I did do that.
Well, it's very interesting. I used to have a saying that says a picture's worth 1,000 words. I'm sure you've heard this, but a feeling's worth 1,000 picture, which means a feeling's worth a 10 to the power of 3 of words.
Yeah.
So if you get someone to feel something, then like you said, it's going to have that more feedback, because you can't describe. I always use the analogy of, okay, well, draw 2 circles, a rectangle and a triangle, and make something out of it. And you'd be like, oh, you could make a million and one things. And if I said to you, draw me a car, same kind of principle, right? Like you can draw a car with two circles, a rectangle and a triangle on top, like however you want to describe something. So I think it is very, very important that people understand the description, but also the feeling. I think that is monumental. And especially in when you talk about Olympic lifting or muscle ups or any of those very complex moves, if you have a feeling of it, then you go, oh, and it kind of clicks.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like you get a whole podcast out of it. we'll go back to you then. So you're doing rugby coaching quite successfully. And then is it a case that you did that and then took the skiing job and never came back, or what was the transition there?
So I was initially meant to go in the military in the UK. So I was training.
What type of military?
I was going to go in the Royal Marines a few pounds ago. Yeah.
Oh shit. That's like the serious fuckers.
Yeah. So I was on the last test for them. I was meant to go down to Limpston and do PRMC. That was literally my last thing. And I said to my warrant officer at the time, I said, oh, I'm just going on a skiing holiday kind of thing. I'd done my course. I was like, I want to go and use it and then I'll come back kind of thing. He's like, all right, yeah, cool, no problem. And that was in 2011. And I went and did my skiing in Canada. And sorry, prior to that, I'd been in Switzerland skiing just for a bit of fun. I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And did my qualifications and went to Canada. And I was like, okay, I do 1 year. So I did 1 year, had an absolute blast, made loads of new friends. I was also personal training then as well. I qualified in my personal training in the summer before the season started. I was like, oh, I can do run both by, you know, get by on a ski instructor's wage and a personal training wage and whatever. And I did that. And I was like, yeah, okay, 1 year was fun. I'm still young. I'm fine. I can go in the military after this and go get... go and get myself into war later. So I was like, I'll do another year. Ended up doing another year. And at that time, my parents moved from the UK to New Zealand as well. I was like, all right, well, I can do winter and then I can do winter and then I could do winter. And it was just before I went to New Zealand that I met Emily. And I'm like, well, this changes things. And she was going to school for her medical radiography and whatnot. And I was like, well, I've already booked to go to New Zealand. So I am going to go to New Zealand. I'm going to do some more teaching out there. And I ended up working in the gym there as personal training as well and whatnot. And the rest is history, so to speak. I had to come back to Canada because the good lady had taken the thing that's located in your chest. Heart, I believe they call it. So.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say cavity. Yeah, heart.
I can see what you're going to say. I was like, no, I'm not going to leave this open for you.
Wow, okay. So your parents kind of retired and moved, was it?
Well, yeah, they did. Although mum got the point, so she's been working. And dad's retired more times than I've had hot dinners, I think. So he keeps getting jobs. And I was like, when are you going to quit, old man? He's like, you know, you can only mow the lawn a certain times a week. You can only walk the dogs so many times a day. I need something to fill my day, and he's still working. So, but who knows?
People our age, I don't get it. Like, people our age are like, you've fucking earned it. Like, just relax and just yes. fucking keep back. Like, my dad is like 76, and yes. he finally came to me the other day where I just kind of got it, where his brother-in-law lives next door. They both kind of like retired at the same time, but dad kept like a few animals around. He's a farmer. He kept a few animals around. He insisted, I remember, like, he judged his brother so harshly for getting a ride on lawnmower. Like, he was giving out about it for months. He was like, fucking idiot. Like, he's ruining his life getting that. And I was like, dude, it's fucking lawnmower. Like, what does it matter? He's like, no, you watch. Then his brother got a Jeep and he was like, fucking idiot. Like, watch now, watch. And sure enough, like, now they're both like similar age. His brother's fucked. Like, can't go for a walk even. He's so stiff. Like, he's just ruined. Got like bad enough diabetes. He's had like a quadruple bypass. Like, my dad is like able to get down on the floor and play with the kids now. Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a struggle bus, but he's able to do it. Like, whereas like, yeah, like, he's just kept himself going or whatever. And it was only, we were talking about it yesterday, and I was kind of like, this is probably actually the first time I understand I kind of thought that that was the aim, that like you work so that you can retire and do nothing. Yeah. And I think like, I just kind of finally understood that like, all right, okay, it's probably not the only aim. When you were doing the, what was the thing you said you'd left to do? PSC, what did you say?
Potential Royal Marines course, PRMC.
Is that it's like Hell Week?
Yeah, it's 3 days of getting the crap kicked out of you, basically, yeah.
Wow. And is that the final, like you make it through that?
Yeah, so PRMC, what you do is you do that and then you get taken on into, you get accepted as a Royal Marine recruit. And then you go and do 26 weeks of training. I think it's 20, it might even be more now. It's going down to Limpston and then you do all your commando training and whatnot. And then you do your hike over Dartmoor. The last bit is the hike over Dartmoor. It's a 30-mile hike, and you get given your green beret at the end of that. So my thing was the PRMC to go and start that 26-week course. So I only had that to do. And, then I would have gone and done all the 26 weeks and stuff.
Do you think you ever just didn't want to do it? Do you think that you just were like, I'll just go skiing? Because when you initially said, I'm going to go on a skiing holiday, I thought you meant like 2 months, not a year.
Yeah no, that's the thing. So, I mean... No, I was really passionate about doing it. I do think I was probably influenced a little bit easier than I should have been. I don't want to live my life in about what ifs. I have the utmost respect for the military and people in law enforcement and whatnot. I just think, but by the sounds of it, that wasn't meant to be my path. And I don't dwell on it too much. Like I miss being that fit for sure. I say a miss, that's my own fault, that's all in my own power. So many sleeps ago, so I don't trouble myself about it too much.
Yeah, that's fair. What was your job? Were you working like going to the military?
Sorry, that's two answers. Yes, I was working. I was working for the National Health Service. I started working at the age of 18, straight out of school in a professional industry. I went in as I was actually working with fixing computers. I was an IT technician for the National Health Service in Lincoln. I went all around the county and dealt with doctors' surgeries and all health centers and stuff, and set up all their computer systems and provided first, second, and third line support for that. And then I did that.
So you were a nerd. Okay, go on.
Yeah, that's basically it. Thank you. Yeah. You know, you can attest to the IT. Is it the IT crowd? Do you remember that series?
Yeah.
Have you turned it on and off again? Exactly. Pretty much what I did for a job. Yeah.
Listen, Mabe, this is your third call this week. Just turn it off and turn it back on again.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's cool, though, that you've gotten to live both lives. You've been a nerd and a jock. It's great. Like, it's a rare transition. People generally don't get to make that change.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't ever consider either of those categories. I've been able to roll with most, is how to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Flies with most crowds.
So what did you do? So you moved to Canada, stayed there for a year, went to New Zealand, went back to Canada, and then Emily was knocking around. She's in finished college, in college?
She would have been, so that would have been when I went back to Canada. She was finishing up in her at BCIT, which is the college for or institute for medical radiography.
Okay.
And she was doing like her last part year there.
Okay.
And we got married in, or we engaged in 2015, marriage in 2016.
When did you meet her?
I met her at the end of 2012, beginning 2013.
Okay.
I didn't hang around. You know, I know a good thing when I've got it, and kind of want to put a ring on that thing and lock it down.
Yeah. Back off.
Yeah, exactly. She's mine. Yeah.
Okay.
Like a tattoo, marking my territory. Take that.
Yeah. You saw her, thought like, oh, she looks nice. And then she said doctor, and you were like, all right, like I'm going to the jewelers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, unfortunately, she hasn't got a doctorate, and she's certainly smart enough to that. But she's as a medical radiographer, she's very well. She's complete opposite of me. She's super good looking, super intelligent, super fit. So,
yeah. Like, opposite. I'm blind, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
she's defied all the odds.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
I think my brother-in-law is a radiographer, And my dad, my father-in-law is a radiographer, but he's also a doctor. So he's like...
So there's a difference between a radiographer and a radiologist, right? So
yeah, I think maybe the son is a radiologist.
That's
and
a doctor. The
dad is a doctor. Yeah. But his wife is a GP, like a general practitioner or whatever. So she's always quick to remind that it's actually doctor and mister, you know, like she's all like, that's her favorite thing to remind him of is the fact that no, I'm the doctor. You're mister. I'm the doctor. Yeah. Remember? Cause you don't have a doctorate. Yeah, it's interesting. It's all, just pictures of your innards basically, isn't it? Like here's a picture of your leg.
It's definitely a lot more to that. I mean, the
more or less.
Yeah. I could not do it. It's very
6 years to say like, yeah, I can see a gap there. That's broken.
Yeah.
Then let me pass it up to the consultant and then he or she will say, yep, broken.
Yeah. They're the one that go confirmed. It's a break or confirmed. Yeah, yeah. Or whatever. Yeah. It's, I mean,
yeah. He's got no leg. Yeah. It's like, oh no, sorry. I was looking at it upside down. Okay. So, you got engaged and what were you doing? You couldn't have been like ski coaching. Were you doing PTing then?
So I ski instructed from 2011 until 2015. Yeah, so I did, and I ran my own personal
training. All year round, though?
Well, so no, I ran my personal training business in the summer and the winter.
Okay.
And then I did my skiing and snowboarding and everything else, or falling down a hill. Yeah, that's basically what I did in the winters. And
with your PTing, was that like strength and conditioning, like...
Yes.
Yeah, whatever.
Exactly. I mean, I qualified in nutrition, and I also qualified in spin and boxer size and all the usual kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I went on to be certified by under the Poliquin group as a biosignature practitioner, which is doing skin fold caliper testing and understanding about hormones and supplementation and stuff like that. So I did quite a deep dive. You talk about nerd. I get quite nerdy about supplements and stuff like that. I like that kind of stuff and how it affects
the body. Biosignature instantly makes me think of like chakra or like auras as opposed to like
that would be Reiki. Yeah. it would surprise you. I'm actually Reiki qualified as well.
But wow, okay.
that's just complete joke in my opinion. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, there was definitely
that's where you put your hands over someone, but don't touch them, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all to do with chakras, the inner eye and the whatever. Yeah, it's a little bit weird, in my opinion, but there's definitely something about it for someone, you know.
And did you say you're certified in that?
Yes, how much, yeah.
That was a two-hour class?
Yeah, I remember it was in England. I went around to this pretty, I use this phrase sparingly, pretty gypsy-style woman. And she was like, you know, doing this thing, you know, ringing the gong and all that kind of thing. But one of my friends at work had done it, and his wife had cancer. And he said, like, you know, it really helped her. And I was like, I was quite intrigued. So I was like, I've never really said no to opportunities. I've always had a look at stuff and gone, you know, there's obviously something here. Yeah. And I can see your brain scheming right now. I can actually hear the clinking from your brain now.
I just think of like your friend, and you go like, all right, I'll have a look. You walk into the room and you're like, nope, but it's too late. The door is closed.
Yeah, I've recently been watching Ted Lasso. I'm not one to quit things. Like usually I like to kind of see it through and get things done. So
that's fair.
That's one of the problems with cakes. I don't quit them.
It was kind of, yeah, I was going to say might come in handy like when you're recording Emily and stuff, but I suppose you want more actual hands-on rather than just like floating.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't want to be here. I just want to be putting them on.
Yeah. Just like moving hands around. Look, you can trust me. Look.
Yeah.
I'm so trustworthy.
I'm not even touching you. Yeah.
So you were doing PTing and stuff, and then was that just like in a global gym type setting or?
Yeah, I worked in numerous different gyms in at the time in Kamloops area, and then I got certified in biosignature, and I decided to set up my kind of own office in a gym, and then lots of people came around for me. So from the years of 2012, 2013, I went from having one client, and by the time I'd finished, I had 106 clients. So wow. I you know, I put up a business, and it was a blue collar city. So it was a little bit more challenged than your standard white collar area. Yeah. I did that successfully, I think, for quite a long time, but it wasn't what I wanted to do. It wasn't fulfilling enough for me. And like I said, I'd always wanted to go in the military. And I said to Emily, I was like, you know, I enjoy my job. It's fun and whatever, but it's not satiating me. So yeah. I said, I'm going to try for the police. And I moved down to Vancouver in the beginning of 2015. So it would have been April 2015. And I went back to a $14-$13 an hour job working in a hostel and security there. Getting into all shenanigans with patients at St. Paul's Hostel in Vancouver. It's the most violent hostel in the country. And worked my way up there and just dealing with police, dealing with mental health patients and stuff like that. And I really enjoyed that. And honestly, it's probably one of the funnest jobs I've ever done. Like, I really did have a good time. I had a great team with me. All of which have gone into policing, and I was the same. We all went on into policing. And then in 2016, I literally got married, turned 30. Oh, no, sorry, I got my PR status in Canada, so I was allowed to legally stay. Got married, turned 30.
Not a permanent residency, is it?
Yeah, correct, yeah. Okay. And then, or green card in the American sense. Yeah, well done, mate. Good. And then I got in the police about 2 weeks later. And
is that, you have to go to like an academy? Do you have to like do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I went to academy.
Anyone see. There that was really good at making sounds with their mouth or anything? Or
yeah, police academy style. Yeah, yeah.
Visit the Blue Oyster on weekends.
Hey, exactly. I'm coming in. I'm coming out.
Yeah, God, I must watch those again. Yeah, you see, this is the thing, right? I prefaced this episode. I spoke to, I don't know if you know JR, how he owns like CrossFit Crash. Mikey Alder says, very interesting chat. I like this. Mikey has a great little habit of, he logs on for 20 seconds, leaves a comment, and then leaves. And then he thinks that I think he's watched the whole show, whereas I know he only logged on to leave that one comment. King here says, this man has lived a life. Yeah, that's the thing. I was talking to JR after I spoke to you. I was like, oh, I was talking to Kyle Roth there, Emily's husband. He's like, oh yeah, what's he like? And I just rattled off like five things, and he was like, right, so the most interesting man in CrossFit. I was like, yep, pretty much. Like, everything you told me, I was just like, right. And then it sounded like one of two things was happening. Either you've lived a life that I couldn't conceivably imagine, or you were just like, what else is this fucking idiot going to believe if I tell him?
Yeah. They say that all stories start with hold my beer and stuff. So like, I've definitely got a few of those. As I said, I've been very privileged, but I've usually tried to not say no to opportunities, or I wouldn't say I get bored. I'm not a person to get bored, but I like to push myself. I like to challenge myself in various different ways. And it's not that if I conquer it, I quit it. I enjoy stuff. And then I'm like, okay, well, where can I go next? Sort of thing.
And the St. Paul's thing, was that like a mental hospital? That wasn't like, it doesn't sound like it was just A&E.
No, oddly enough, it's a general hospital. It's just the fact that, and many people in the Canada area had heard of what's called the Downtown East Side. That's a populated area in Vancouver. It's got about 3,000 homeless people, but mental health is prolific there. Drug use is very, very high, and
the best of the best.
Maybe. Unfortunately, that these people are in drug psychosis, or they've had so much crystal meth that their frontal lobe has been melted, and they don't understand reality from what is. Yeah. So it was super interesting. Like I said, I love that job, but it was suggested to me by a recruiter as a from someone.
Oh, this is like on your application form to be like, look at this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm leaving bits out. There's blanks and whatever, but I'd worked in security. I'd worked on the doors in England prior to coming out to Canada and stuff. So I've been in security and whatever. Rather than drinking, I used to go and work on the doors and earn money on a night out rather than get drunk. But
that's fair, yeah. Are you a regular policeman then? Well, like, what's your, do you ride a horse and wear a red uniform? Yeah,
I'm not a Mountie. No, I work for the City of Vancouver Police.
Okay. Do you carry a gun?
What's that?
Do you carry a gun? Are there guns in the police in Canada?
Yeah. All police officers have sidearms in Canada, yes.
Okay. Not in Ireland. They have sticks.
Yeah. Well, we have those as well. But we're not allowed to use them anymore, like, for anything, these things. And yet
you have a gun. So don't use your stick. No,
you're not allowed to use a gun or a knife. The thing is, you can't. No, you have to have justifiable reason for anything these days. So.
And when you fire a gun, does it let off a bullet or does it just go, sorry?
It comes out with a flag. Comes out with a flag and goes bang. Yeah, no.
Yeah. No, my apologies. You're under arrest. I'm really sorry about this. Yeah. Like, hate to inconvenience your day, but you did rob that bank. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
This is a true story. I held my first gun when I was at Crash. Jonathan Ortega, he's a military guy, and I think he works in a gun store, a gun shop. So he had a gun in his room, and I was like, "Oh, is that your gun?" And he goes, "Yeah." And I just picked it up. I was just looking at it or whatever, and he was like freaked out. Tyler, Travis from Vindicate, all freaked out. And I handed it back to Ortega. And I was like, what's the big deal? Like, safety is on it. And Ortega was like, there is no safety on that gun. I was like, right, okay. It's like, yeah, we just leave guns lying around. No problem.
Yeah.
It was the first and last time I touched a gun, actually.
Well, I mean, there's a huge thing about gun discipline. I could go off on that, muzzle control.
All I did was juggle it. I just didn't see the big deal.
Juggle it. Brilliant. That's great to hear.
Juggle it twice, caught it in my mouth, handed it back to him. I don't know what the problem is. I didn't do that. That's it.
Did you go to Dar at the end as well?
Yeah, I went to whoop. Sorry. I'll just plaster over that little hole in the wall. That was funny. That's one of those hindsight, funny in hindsight, because everyone's fine. So it was hilarious. But
there's all people just ducking on the ground and you're like, what? Yeah.
No, I wasn't pointing it around at people or whatever. Oh, but yeah. I was not pointing. I remember him saying just point it down and at the floor. And yeah, I remember him saying it a second time. And I was like, I'm just going to leave this down because I feel like the tension is rising. And then he was like, I said, what's the big deal? The safety is on. He's like, that gun doesn't have safety. And I was like, right. Okay. That's pretty poor design of a gun, if I'm being honest. So I need to talk to the manufacturer. That's who our issue is with, not me. So you're in the police then, and you've been doing that eight years.
Yeah.
And what's the, are you like, is it the same way that I imagine it from watching say American TV shows, where if you want to be a detective, you have to do it a test to be a detective, and if you don't, you stay, you're on the same rung, but maybe parallel rungs of the ladder at the same height, unless you want to change your kind of role completely, basically?
Yes. I mean, it's different from each department, it's different from each organization you work in. Vancouver is a moderately sized police department. There's about 1500 members. I mean, comparative to the London Metropolitan Police, there's 33,000, right? So it's very, very different in that side of things. But in regards to a constabulary in Canada, it's a fair size.
Yeah.
But if you want to develop, same as anything, that you work up your ranks. So you go, obviously, you recruit in the academy, you come out of the academy, you become certified, I never really remember if they say it's certified and then you become additional certified after block three. Basically, you have to do it a little bit like a probationary period. And then you work your way up into what's called a fourth, third, second, and first class constable. And then you become a senior constable and maybe an acting sergeant, and then sergeant and so on and so forth. You go that way. But if you want to go in to do specialties, well, you have to do a certain amount of time on the road and being proficient with dealing people and kind of, I suppose, serving your time a little bit and dealing with the not so exciting calls and whatever. And then if you want to go into You know, want to go into narcotics, if you want to go into the domestic violence, if you want to go into dogs or ERT or SWAT or something like that, you have to kind of build your resume and your I suppose employability in that respect. So you got to say, okay, I've done this amount of calls and whatnot, and then there's tests and interviews and stuff for it. It's just the same as any other kind of organization.
Mikey, log back in to leave another comment. Do you deal with that's emergency response team, is it, ERT, when you're based with the VPD, that's Vancouver Police Department?
That's what I want to do, is go to ERT.
Now, I need to talk to you about this.
Sure.
Are you allowed to talk about the course that you did recently?
What course is that?
With the guys not from Canada, the group.
I suppose I could do. I'd rather not. That's all right.
Okay. But you did You did an extensive training with
As I said, I'd rather not talk about that.
I'm not gonna say much, but I just like, so.
Go ahead. You've let out. People want to know now.
I could bring up a screenshot of a message where you said no holes barred. You said no holes barred.
Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead. Yeah.
I won't. Because I'm curious about the balance between, like, what hours do you work now, say? Do you have, because it's not a 9-to-5, like, it's shift work, I assume. So what are your, because you kind of have this dual life of, like, you're coaching Emily and you're, like, there's obviously specific periods of the year where it's incredibly intensive and you're required a lot. And, like, okay, yeah, you can use leave for, like, August or whatever to go to, well, Texas now. But, like, the lead up to that is still busy. And like, you're required in two roles there, like for emotional support and like husbandry duties or whatever. And then also for like watching and giving feedback and helping with like the coaching emotional side of it and just the coaching side of it. But then you have work as well. Like, are they understanding of that, or do you just have to work around with whatever you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, they're very supportive in that respect. I'm very fortunate. I work at what's called a 4-on-4-off. So I work 4 days on, 4 days off. So as soon as I take 4 days, I get 12, which is how I'm able to accrue so much time off.
Right, okay.
So it's I'm very lucky that way. We're very, they're very understanding in regards to like what Emily does and stuff. A lot of the guys and girls know who Emily is more than they know who I am, which is kind of great as well. But yeah, I've never not been able to go to a competition or anything like that. Really, they've been very, very accommodating that way, and I'm very, very grateful for that. I think the biggest thing is what you kind of said while being there and supporting. I think any coach would say our work is actually done in the off season. Like, you know, our work is to be like, okay, you kind of look at competitions, and just this last few months, like Emily's done the Games, Rogue, Dubai, Waterpalooza, and then the Open's coming up. Now, with the 25% of people going through the first part of the Open, Emily should be able to make through that, and quarters and semis and so on and forth, like, with the objective to get to the Games. My job as a coach, and I think any coach, is to actually acknowledge, okay, well, we need to peak here and so on and so forth. And when you look at all these competitions we do, we take a lot of data from that and we say, okay, well, this needs some work on. And Emily's really good at being, I suppose, structurally criticized and saying, okay, well, we need to do this, this, and this, and we need to change that, that, and that. And she'll work on it. And I've never come across an athlete in all the years I've coached that someone who just dedicates herself to that. You know, she's her tenacity and her discipline is second to none, and it's very easy for me.
In the room with you now, is she there?
I'm actually in Miami at the moment, so I'm nowhere near her. So
are you still?
Well, no, I went back. So this course you talk about, I'm on that course again.
Oh shit! Okay, all right, yes. Okay,
yeah.
Well, you brought it back up. I wasn't going to bring it back up. So when you're coaching Emily, then,
yeah,
like it's I think it takes a special kind of like level of trust, I guess, from her. I'm going to assume a lot of things when I'm saying this, but she's in a sport that's constantly evolving and changing, and the landscape is changing, the competition season is changing, the off season is changing, the structure of success is changing, or the markers of success are changing. The success is skewed so heavily by people like Fraser and Tia and Rich, where it's like, well, if you're not fucking dominant, you're shit. Like, is basically that's what success is made to look like. But she, through watching camps start up and like look like they're flourishing and then like crumble a little bit, another camp start up and stay and build and grow, she has stayed with you throughout all of that. So like the level of trust that she must have in you to be like, because like you said, you don't, on paper, if you look at just CrossFit, you don't really have the chops.
Well, I'll be honest. I didn't even have a CrossFit certification. I didn't certify in CrossFit. Anything I've learned is I've learned by doing. Now, what I, and I may be a bit immodest saying this, what I do have is a very good eye. I can look at something and kind of reverse engineer it and say, like, for example, a muscle up. I can't do a muscle up, but I can tell you how to do a muscle up and how it works. I know something like that. And I can reverse engineer something like, okay, well, we're clearly your first pull of your muscle up is coming from your trapezius muscle. I need you to be able to activate that a lot better than what you're doing side of things. And then the end part of your muscle up, you're going to have to be able to work your tricep, right? You're going to have to push out of that muscle up at the end of it. So I can look at something and reverse engineer it. Whereas in, I think that, I mean, I can't take it away from the coaches out there that do CrossFit. These guys have been doing it for years, are far more intelligent than me. There's many coaches that are far more intelligent than me, but Emily has trusted me with that stuff. And more than anything is I know Emily as an athlete better than anybody as well. Like she's not just my athlete, but she's my wife. So I remember a funny story in Dubai. I needed to piss her off. And I know how to do that better than anybody, right? Like I know how to piss my wife off. But the reason was is I needed to get her angry to get her to fire. And the fire that she needed was real exertion. Like it was really a powerful kind of workout. And I had to really piss her off. And I particularly remember this because I was writing a note on my phone. I was writing an apology to her as I was basically pissing her off. And I went and pissed her off huge amount. She went on, ended up winning this event. And I just went to the end of it. I just handed her my phone, which I'd already written. I was like, I'm so sorry that I pissed you off. The idea was to get you worked up so you could do this the way. And she just gave me one of those, it's okay, it's fine kind of looks. And, you know, like she obviously realized it was all right. But the
truth of that story is you pissed her off by accident. You had a genius idea when you saw her winning the workout to be like, I've got it. I'll tell her I did it on purpose so that she'd win the workout.
it was. I mean, she's also, we've developed as a couple, we've developed a relationship. But when I'm her coach, I'm a coach. And when I'm her husband, I'm her husband.
Is that hard to switch off though? Like say if you're in Miami, you're at Wodapalooza. And say you go home, like obviously in the warm-up area, you're like, do this, do that. And then you go back, like you leave. Are you able to just be like, all right, hey, look at that palm tree. That's cool. And like not talk about, that was a shit conversation starter, but you know what I mean?
No, I mean, it is something you develop over time. Do we talk about CrossFit? Of course we do. We talk about it a lot of the time, but we do have that separation. And that's just something we developed throughout the years, and we know when to do it and when not to do it kind of thing. And I would imagine Tia and Shane and Chris Jeremo and Patrick and whoever else have that relationship do that as well. I mean, you said earlier, I live vicariously. I really do live vicariously for Emily. I have a wonderful life of traveling around and riding her coattails and whatnot. But we get also the other side of things that we get to do it as a couple, which is a blessing, really. Like it's really quite cool.
Do you ever have to hold her back from, like, say you mentioned the competition she did there? That's like an extensive enough, like off season tour.
Like, yeah. Do you ever say like, no, like, come on, just why don't you just take a year? Like, what, like, is there ever a temptation to do things differently and say, all right, we competed in loads of stuff in the off season this year. Next year, let's just not compete in anything in the off season, just show up at the Open. Or do you think you need, is she someone who needs those touch points?
I think she's going to kill me for saying this. She's one of the more mature, I think she's the most mature athlete on the field. And she's, you know, so, but she's also on a trajectory that's like this at the moment. She's still going up. Don't get me wrong, she has a, you know, whatever throughout the season. That's competition. That's life. But every year she's gotten better. You know, she's never placed outside the top 20 in the CrossFit Games since she started. And she's only getting better. You said that competition is changing and whatnot. Yeah, it is. But I'm never going to say to her, no, you can't do that. I'm never going to do that. That's not me. I think that you can learn something from everything. So if she says, oh, you know, I want to go to Waterpalooza and do it, or she says, hey, I'm a bit tired, I totally support her decision, whatever she wants to do. We've been very lucky this season. I mean, last season she got injured at Waterpalooza where she popped her calf. And this season she got through okay. Did she do as well as she wanted to? No. But that's competition, that's life. And everything we've done, we learn and build from it and get better as we go along. So,
and like in the lead up to those competitions as well, there's often times where like everybody's talking about different people and putting expectations, like external expectations of, you know, oh, Emily should podium here in like Waterpalooza, like not an incredible field, like, you know, top four, top five, whatever. And then when she doesn't, or any kind of competition doesn't live up to like where she should be, as in like where she's projected to be by experts or by other people or whatever. After that, then, like, do you make her aware of those things, say, beforehand? Is she aware of those things beforehand? And if she is, afterwards, do you have to pick her up? And I guess, like, which hat are you wearing when you pick her up? Like, are you wearing your coach's hat being like, well, look, here's the statistics, and you, like, this girl did this, and, you know, you did what you needed to do in this, but then that person happened? Or do you wear your husband hat and be like, yeah, it's fucking shit, like, it's annoying that that's happening, or it's frustrating, or whatever?
I think I had to wear both there a little bit, really. Like, I had to be morally supportive as a husband, especially when injuries come around. That's a huge one. I think that you kind of, because... I'm very protective of my wife. But as a coach side of things, I also have to be very matter of factual. I think men, and I'm not speaking for all men, but I know for me, I'm a very matter of factual kind of person. And I like to deliver something and say, okay, this and this and whatever. Emily knows me better than that. Like, I'm never ever trying to be malicious towards her. It's always meant to be structural and how we can develop. But if she doesn't do well in something, just because, and there's some incredible statisticians out there, you know, Brian Friend will be able to do his nerdiness. I sorry, Brian, love you, buddy, but like, I have no idea how he does all this statistics and stuff. You can come up with all this kind of stuff, but it's all down to what happens on the floor. Like, you don't know someone's going to do. People come out of nowhere, and especially at like Waterpalooza, there was only five events. So you had a challenging event, like there was no way of coming back for it. I think everybody talked about that. But you take everything you've got and you do the best you can. My thing with Emily is, and I always said to her, if you can go out there and have fun and you enjoy doing it, go do it. Like, and just do your thing. And if it's a run or something like that with toes to bar or something, usually she does all right. So we know her strengths and we know her weaknesses. Not that she does.
At the games, then, was it like 2 years ago she got her
blood or injury or whatever? 2022, yeah.
Is that the quickest you've ever taken off your coach's hat and put on your husband's hat and been like, fuck? Like, what's your response to that happening?
Well, so I mean. We had an idea of what it was, thank goodness to the amazing medical team and support you have at the CrossFit Games, like Sean Rocket, just an absolute godsend of a guy. You get to the hospital, and I think And I don't want to sound so non-demonstrative, but like as a husband, I had to kind of go into my mode of like, what have we got before us? Because the doctors there, they said, look, we want to make you aware that this is a life-threatening thing. It's very, very serious. And they said, you know, you need to sign these papers of DNR or like if she wants resuscitation and all that kind of stuff. We need to prep her for bypass. And it's a very serious thing. So I was very careful there, like, and tried to be strong for Emily and not show emotion and what, like, not that I don't cry or get upset or anything like that, but you have to be strong for that person there. And Emily was going through a very traumatic time as it was. Like, she, you know, done all this training. She was in the peak of her physical fitness and she got cut down on her first event. But when they carted her off for her surgery, and then you get a surgeon call you three and a half hours into the surgery. He's like, hey, I've still got some work to do. You know, like that's no small feat, a 5-hour surgery by the end of it, it was. And he said, I remember in particular saying, he's like, I saw the calluses on her hands and that inspired me to keep going. Like, so that makes you proud as a husband side of things, but you're like, man, but to kind of wrap up your question, was like, oh, did I put the coach's hat or the husband's hat? The husband hat's always on. That's the number one hat. That's the one that never really comes off. It's just covered at times when I'm coaching her. So
good job she hadn't like shaved her hands or something before. That she didn't have like clean hands, and he looked at her like, ah, fuck her.
He had just done 75 chest to bar and 75 toes. Yeah. So one of which she did one-handed. So there you go.
Not bad. When she comes back from that, then are you like, I know you're saying like, well, I'd never tell her what to do or what not to do, but like, was there a part of you that was like, maybe should we just leave it? Like, so we, you know, like, are we done?
No. Like I said, I'm not one to quit, and Emily's definitely not one to quit on something. So what we did is we strategized a recovery plan, and we strategized, like, for example, I said to her, and part of the recovery was like, you must not lift more than 10 pounds of weight. And I am a very firm believer of when something's broken, the idea is to get it moving as quickly as possible. So I said to her, okay, you're not allowed to lose more than 10 pounds of weight, but every morning she did a grip test with me. She'd pick up a jug of milk. So a gallon of milk, basically, and move that around. So that was what she was able to move as a weight. So that's what she started with. And she recovered so quickly because she was disciplined. And that's what it comes down to, is her discipline side of things. Was like, okay, I can't rush this. I got to do this. And then I think she was back training within she was actually back training in Nashville when she went there and did, oh, I can do legs. As you know, you go on the isolation machine. I can do hamstring curls and you know, quad extension, or okay, fine, you can do that. And then everything else, it was very, very quick because she kept moving. And it comes back to the story about your dad, where you say, like, as they get older, but if you stop moving, that's when you have a problem. If you keep moving, you keep things ticking over, your body goes, okay, this is what we're doing. And that's what she did.
What was her next competition after that, after the games? What was her next?
She competed 3 months to the day in Dubai, where she ran up the Burj Khalifa.
And were you there? Were you in Dubai?
Yeah.
And what, like, was that, have competitions since been different? Like, have, because it's kind of like when you see something like that happen, it's like when you're driving, you see a car crash and you suddenly become hyper aware of like how you're driving and, you know, what, like you're, and at last there's like a residual effect for like a few more journeys where you're like, fuck, remember that thing that happened? Like, and then when it's her and when it's in such a specific environment, when you revisit that environment, is there a part of you that's like, gets nerves that you didn't previously have?
Yeah, I mean, it happened in Wodapalooza again in 2023. She blew her calf out skipping. Injuries happen. I've been on, like, being on the rugby field, I've been around injuries all my life, right? So,
yeah.
And Emily is a gymnast. Injuries happen. Like, that's part of competition. Sadly, that's part of competition.
Yeah, but I guess there's injury and there's like, oh, she could die.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you, it's sad to say, you cross a road and get knocked over by a bus or whatever, right? Like, you can only live your life in certain protection side of things, right? You can't live your life in a complete bubble. One, it'd be boring, and two, like, you could still, I don't know, you could get cancer right through someone smoking next door or whatever. I have no idea, but what I'm trying to say is, we are very cautious of that, and the fitter, the more elite you become, injuries are more prone because of the fine-tuned machine you're becoming. Like, if you have a muscle imbalance on your quadricep or something, you're likely to rip your hamstring. If you have a something where your anterior tibialis or your calf is a little bit out of whack, then yeah, you may blow a calf. It's all matter of things. But every time she's done something, she's always come back stronger, and that's because we've worked it out and gone, okay, there's clearly an imbalance there, or there's something there, and that's something we've done together. So you can say, oh yeah, I'm going to stop you doing this. No, like, it could happen anytime. So leave each day if it is your last.
Was it kind of a blessing, that first event, the birds, like the fact that you couldn't see her? She's just like gone. She just went through the door, and then it was just like, all right. Like, you didn't have to watch her on the floor if that's her first.
I didn't even go there. I think I slept in. I was like, see you later. You know, what am I going to teach you? Go climb some stairs for 160 floors.
A supportive husband.
Yeah.
When is the divorce? I'm just gonna order up some room service. Let me drop me a text. Let me know how it goes.
Oh yeah, I went for breakfast in the hotel. It was great. It was awesome.
Yeah. God, you're living the high life. Fuck, you knocked something out of my head there now by how lazy you were in Dubai. That's really throwing me there.
I'm lazy.
You mentioned a couple of times there, you were talking about the army, and you said, oh, that was a few pounds ago. You mentioned like your physical appearance and weight a couple of times. And I'm curious about that, being around the environment that you're in and having the role that you have, and be like, I've never felt more self-conscious than when I was at the games. And because
when there's
just
an Adonis of males walking around with their shirts on.
Yeah, everybody's like 0.1% body fat. Even the fucking spectators are in better shape than half the athletes. Do you ever feel self-conscious or?
Yeah, I mean, I'm human as well. I'm definitely self-conscious. I've not tried hard enough, and that's kind of a disappointment on my side of things. And Emily's really good. She gives me a kick in the backside and say, oi, come on, get your stuff together. Believe it or not, for a bigger dude, I'm pretty fit for a bigger dude. Like, I surprise a lot of people but what I can do. I'm absolutely terrible at body weight movements nowadays, but picking stuff up and throwing it around, no problem. And I can go for runs and walks and, you know, whatever. I can hike up mountains and stuff. I surprise a lot of people there. But yeah, like when you've got, look at Brent Fikowski, like his body is an absolute specimen kind of thing.
He's fucking annoying as well, because the older he gets, the better look. Like, have you seen pictures of him from like 2018?
He's like a fine wine. He's just like him. He's like a fine wine. The older he gets, the better he is.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. It's incredibly frustrating, like admirable, but fuck him also. But like, fair play to him, but fuck him. I'm interested. I was kind of waiting to see there if Nick was going to pick up on your picking stuff up and throwing it around line. I thought he's going to see an opportunity there to bring up. It's interesting. Do you know what you should do if you want some adherence? Sure. 100 burpees a day. That's what I'm doing.
I have been watching you do 100 burpees a day, and
I've never been more adhered.
Yeah, that looks absolutely gross.
It's actually genuinely. I did it with a vest yesterday, because a couple of people messaged me the day before and said, "Oh, your chest not touching the floor," and I said, "It actually is." I was like, "That's one of the few perks of being overweight, is my chest will touch the floor before my actual chest touches the floor, because there's additional surface area there." And they were like, no, it's actually not. I was like, my fucking nipples are on the floor. Like, that's my chest. Like, what's my chest if it's not my nipples?
You're so
I sent Hiller the video, and I was like, Am I wrong? Like, I feel like it's touching the floor, but then I see what they're saying. Like, am I wrong? Are they wrong? Are we both wrong? What? And he sent me back a video. I was like, no, you need, like, your elbow needs to be higher than your shoulder. Just think of it that way. He was like, currently you're like arching your back or whatever. So your elbow is lower than your shoulder. So try and get it the other way around and you'll have to touch your chest. And I was like, all right, okay. So I did it with a vest yesterday as like penance. I was like, right, this will make up for however many I did wrong in my own head. And I put on the vest and I was like, fuck, this is going to be an absolute nightmare. And it's going to take like 4 hours, like 8 minutes. Like, it was actually grand. Wow. Like, it was fine. It's always when you say 100, it sounds like so much.
It
and
is.
Then you do, like, but then you do 10 and you're like, oh, sure, I'm a tenth of the way there. Sure. And then you do like 25 and you're like, oh, I'm halfway to halfway. And then you do 50 and you're like, I'm halfway. And then you do 75 and you're like, I'm halfway past halfway to halfway. No, yeah. That's wrong.
You do exactly what I do. You play games with yourself, right?
Yeah.
Like I do the same when I'm out running or something like that. I'm like, I've just got to get to that lamppost. And I'm like, I'm halfway there or whatever. And then I get to the lamppost. I'm like, okay, I didn't die. I'm very much one of these people, if I don't die, I'm okay kind of thing. It's fine. Let's just keep going. But I burpees are one thing for me. And going back to the training for the Royal Marines, we used to have a thing, and they used to call them bastards. So that was a burpee, but you'd have to do a push up into a burpee, and then as you jump up, you do a star jump, like a proper spread star jump. And I remember we played a game and we had two dice, and it had numbers on it. And I was in civvy clothing, so I was in a shirt and a thing, and they were like, okay, this is your punishment. And one of the numbers on the dice was 60. And the other one was like, I mean, like there was 12, 6, 5 or whatever. Like, and it rolled 60 and the next guy rolled bastards. And I just remember, like, I was in a shirt and a frigging pair of chinos or whatever doing this workout. I got absolutely battered.
And then you go down into a plank, you jump your feet back, you do a push-up.
Push-up, you stand up, do a jump and actually do a star jump. And that's one.
It's not like just head. You have to be like out.
Full on spread. Okay. Spread your arms. Spread your legs. Yeah.
Fuck. I'll do 100 of them tomorrow. And I'll report back.
Good luck, man. I mean, all the power to you. I definitely do grievance things. I go down and like Shamu's on the floor for about 5 minutes and then eventually he gets up and does something. But,
yeah. No, a lot of stuff I do is grief, like grief running, grief burpees, grief everything. Yeah. It's just like self-hatred and that's the pure self-hatred and caffeine are the two motivators. All right, so you're heading into another season together. Has there ever been a period of time where you said, hey, I'm just looking at like here, right? So obviously that's the outlier, that's the season where she had her injury.
Yeah.
But like, say she finishes 18th, right?
Yeah.
Makes the games, finishes 18th. Wunderbar. Then she goes back the next year and it's like, all right, like we're gearing up for whatever. And she finishes like three places higher, which on paper, you're like, all right, that's, I guess it's an improvement. But when you know what you know about CrossFit, you're like, fucking hell, moving up three places across the games, no mean feat. Like that's pretty impressive considering all the stuff that's going on there. Is there ever a part of you though that say like hypothetically between those 2 years says, I kind of thought we had top 10 in us. Like maybe it's me, like maybe you need a change, maybe, or has she ever come to you and said, oh, what would you think if I went to, I don't know who, like DECA or I don't know, like a, like training think tank or whoever. Has there ever been those kind of conversations?
Absolutely. So I've always said to her, look, if you don't feel like you're doing well under me, I'm not going to be, I'm not offended. I'm not a power trippy kind of person. You know, there's definitely way far more intelligent people than me that know about this stuff. I pull information from everywhere and anywhere and I do the best I can. Emily is great in the fact she does trust me. It's taken a long time to develop that trust. But I've said to her, like, you know, if you want to go and train with, you know, a proven, or if you want to go train with HWPO or anything like that, I will not be offended. More the power to you. Was that me jumping on a quad bike?
Yeah. That bird just fucking landing on her hand, or is that like staged?
Yeah, no, that was in Garibaldi Lakes, so that was cool. Yeah,
but she randomly put her hand out.
Yeah, no, yeah. So I can whistle to the bird and it'll come down. I'm not kidding. No, I can't. Like it'll just come down. Exactly. What would you done if a bird just came and landed on you? That would be epic.
Or like smacked into the window. That would be crazy. Yeah. there's a. Oh, I'm not going to be able to find it out. Maybe it was on a story. But there was a picture.
I can maybe help you. Wait, which one?
It was on. You were on the cruise. I think was it this one?
Yeah.
But I thought they were in a different order. I don't know. Anyway, I thought she posted a picture on a cruise. And then the next day I posted a picture with you. And I was like, he asked her to post that. He was like, hey, you need to put a picture up with me now, please. I feel a bit left out on a ledge here.
No, I don't ever like, I'm not like that. I'm very lucky that I am married to her. So I get to see her every day. Like I don't need her to post about me on social media. When she does, it's great. But I quite like it. That's a great photo of me. And look at that. Jeez. There you go. That's me doing my jumping there for the day.
How long does it take for your voice to come back after a major competition?
Maybe a day and a half, 2 days.
Yeah, because when I spoke to you in Miami, you didn't sound like you. That's the one. Look, there it is. Bikini picture, and then next day.
Yeah,
I'm spoken for.
Yeah, it's thirst trap, and then oh, I've got a husband. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Back off, leches. Yeah. Like you know that Jesus thing of like, hey, what are you looking at? It's like that's you.
Exactly. Like, hey,
what was that last picture? Like someone's just scrolling up through her page. And it's just like, oh, wow. Hey, what's that last picture you were looking at?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. The career she's had is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. So going into this season then, does anything change? Does it all like, do you keep going or are you a fidgety coach? Like, are you like, oh, I wonder if we change this little thing. And I wonder, like, are you a tinkerer or do you just kind of keep the faith?
I never try and reinvent the wheel. I think the biggest thing for Emily, and she'd be the first to say this, what's affected her most, and oddly enough, I think it was Hiller that did a video on this, that they were saying, oh, don't worry so much about the strength. Well, Emily has an incredible endurance. Like, she's, without being a modest, she probably has the best engine on the CrossFit field, like certainly for running. And the more events there are, the better it is for her as well. Like she sort of gets into her stride. But what we are trying to do is we are trying to narrow that gap in the strength area. And that doesn't happen overnight. Like if you start talking about muscle fibers, well, Emily predominantly when she started was type 1A, you know, and to change you into the athlete. Yeah. Okay. So the way to think about it is you've got Arnold Schwarzenegger and whatever, he's got the show muscles and then you got the go muscles. Well, if you think of that, that's the mitochondria and how it's made up of four different types. You can get all geeky, but I'm sure people will be able to explain it much better than me. But I had to basically take her from someone who's an endurance athlete who can do lots of running and all that kind of stuff, and go, okay, well, we need to train you in a way that you're going to be able to weightlift and move more weight. When I started with her, she couldn't front squat more than 135 pounds. So now she's front squatting, you know, over 100 pounds more than that, like kind of thing. It's a big difference. That doesn't happen overnight. There are people that start training and predominantly are type 2A or type 2B. Their power is going to go up. But then at the same time, where you say to them, okay, now go and do a 5K run, they'll be like, no. And that would take them a long time, right? So talking about training for the type of train or type of person who's learning, but also the type of trainer or the type of athlete or muscle group they're made up of too, that's a huge part of it. So I don't try and reinvent the wheel. What we do try and do is look at Emily's data and say, okay, we need to work here, here, and here. I can exploit this because you're good at that already. And then we like try and capitalize. And it is a consistency game. It's about being consistently good as much as you can. The idea of CrossFit is to put out as much power for as long a period as possible, simply put. And no matter what it is, you know, if it's rope climbing, if it's running, if it's rowing, like Olympic lifting, no matter. It's about doing as much as possible for the longest amount of possible time.
When you finish the course that you're doing, and if that leads to a job change, does that change your availability to be a coach or no?
No, I'm not going to be leaving my job or anything like that. At least I don't think I am. I hope not.
Okay.
As I said, I want to go in ERT eventually if I can. So that's my objective.
Oh, actually.
Oh boy.
No, this is
props now. You're getting props. This is scary.
This is more for Nick than for you. Just if anyone wants, where's the camera? There's Emily there. You can get that. Mint trading cards, Nick, I think, isn't it? He's after giving me like the price of two of them. So I said, bring it up. He's doing well on you, all right. I kind of feel like that's a dirty comment, but
it is definitely. She's doing well under me. He's implying the heaviness of my weight and also like, yeah, it's fine. It's good. I appreciate that, Nick. Yeah. Well done.
The girth. Yeah. Wow. I can't believe it is the girth. I really like this dude. Yeah. And King Lear asked earlier on, how much weight have I lost? And I hate to be nice, but you're looking lean. It's okay to be nice. You can do it sometimes. I think since November or since the start of December, like 7 kilos. Nice. What's that in pounds? Like 14.
15 pounds. Yeah.
2.2 is 4 pounds. And it's the burpees, man. I mean, obviously, I'm doing other stuff as well, but the burpees just keep the adherence where you're like, I'm not going to eat that because I have burpees later on. Or I just did burpees earlier on. I'm not going to eat that because that would be stupid. Or like, I must remember to... Oh, there you go. What the fuck? It had nothing to do with his weight. She's just under him sexually. Yeah, classic. That's classic, Nick. Listen, I'll leave you go. I really, really enjoy talking to you. I really enjoy spending time with you in Miami. You're a good dude. It's great getting to talk to you. Congrats on everything, man. You've had some fucking life. It's crazy, like when you just to look at a timeline is just bizarre of the different things you've done. It's just like the transitions just don't make any sense. Like it's like, all right, so you coached jiu-jitsu when you were 14 and now you're coaching a CrossFit Games athlete. It's like, right, did much happen in between there? It's like, well, yes, actually quite a bit happened. I don't need the tagline of the show, the most interesting coach and CrossFit. I don't think that's an exaggeration at all. I'd love to have you back on another time again, and we can catch up a little bit. It'd be great.
Enjoy
your course, whatever it is. I don't know, whatever note taking lessons you're doing. It's speed typing, isn't it? Something like that.
Speed typing. We'll go with that.
It's a receptionist course. It's like typing. Thanks very much. Best of luck with the season and, you know, whatever you're up to now with the season and with, best of luck to Emily too. Thank you.
Appreciate it, mate. Be safe, okay? Bye.
I will. I'll try my best.